You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
From the depths of the sea, this is Transmissions from Atlantis, a sci-fi, fantasy, and horror podcast with a special emphasis on Doctor Who. Featuring the creators of Seekers of the Lost Worlds, Rita and J.C. Della Torre.
Hello, everybody. My name is J.C. Della Torre.
And I'm Rita Della Torre.
And we apologize for the quality of this audio broadcast. Problem is that we are in the process of moving, and we've packed away all of our audio equipment, so...
We're recording this straight off of our iPhone.
Yeah, so the audio quality is not going to be up to the best standards that we've done before, so we're going to go in and apologize for that ahead of time, and hopefully you can still enjoy this podcast. We're definitely going to put all the elements that we normally put into it. It's just going to sound a little flaky since we're recording off an iPhone. Hopefully it's not going to be that bad, right?
Yeah.
All right, so for tonight's lineup, we are going to be talking about the Seekers of the Lost Worlds premiere. We finally had our premiere on July 12th,
and woohoo!
It was, as the kids say, lit. We're also going to discuss a little bit about the future of Transmissions from Atlantis. I know it sounds ominous, but we have some plans for the future.
For our rapid fire segment, we've got a lot of things to talk about, including Ant-Man and the Wasp, Skyscraper, Mr. Rogers, Won't You Be My Neighbor documentary, Voltron, Lucifer, and Aquaman, and Shazam.
And we finally did complete our MCU rewatch, and the only thing we have left are the two movies that are in the theaters now, which we are already planning to go see again, but everything else we've already seen, so we can comment on rewatching all of the MCU up to Ant-Man and the Wasp.
And thanks to San Diego Comic-Con, we have a lot of Doctor Who news.
Yes, we do. So we've got all new monsters and no Daleks. Are the Barrowman rumors false? Because some of the things we heard in San Diego Comic-Con would say, probably, yeah, they were false. There was the big footage leak that came out. And, of course, we will give our first opinions on the new cast as they had their first opportunity to be interviewed in public. And so we will definitely comment on those things. So that's what we have going on for the episode 145 of Transmissions from Atlantis. And so let's get going, right?
Yep.
Alright, so let's talk about the Seekers of the Lost Worlds premiere.
I was so nervous about this for the longest time. I was so stressed out because I had it in my head that everybody was going to absolutely hate this film. They're going to think it was cheesy and badly made and that it was going to suck and that they were going to not necessarily laugh at the funny scenes, but laugh at the movie in general.
Yep. But it seemed like everybody had a blast. Everybody exited the theater with smiles on their faces. It didn't look like anybody had felt like they wasted their, hour and 18 minutes. And most people stayed after the film was over with and hung out with us, hung out with the actors and hung out with us.
To enjoy the little VIP party that we had after the film.
Yep.
And everybody came up with up to us, told us how much they loved the soundtrack, they loved the film. We had quite a few people asking us, okay,
When's the sequel? Cool. When's the sequel?
This was cool. When's the next one?
Yep. And of course, I mean, what was your thoughts on walking the red carpet?
It was cool. It was really neat to, you know, get pictures in front of our background and to walk the red carpet and to
glam it up a little bit.
Yeah, glam it up a little bit. And when I mean glam it up a little bit, I actually went to Ulta to get my makeup done because, well, as everybody, anybody that knows me knows, I don't do makeup. So,
yep, Rita doesn't need makeup. Well, you don't.
Well, I did for the premiere, so I did doll it up, and it was nice to feel pretty and special.
Yeah, you went the whole nine yards too. You had like the falsies and you know the false eyelashes and
Are you kidding? I had the little wingtip eyeliner. They did the whole smoky eye thing. Yep. I'm like, well, cool.
Yep.
And how about you? You were decked out in a full on tuxedo.
Yep, I was. I looked like Bond, James Bond. Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Our full cast was there. Unfortunately, Dean couldn't make it, but we did have the rest of the cast in-house, which was great. The extras who participated in the film were also there. A friend's family and even people I didn't know.
Yep.
So it was cool that, you know, everything went off without a hitch. Everybody loved the film. And now I'm really looking forward to working on a sequel.
Yep. And we want to make sure that we say thank you to the Villaggio Theater for hosting the event. Joe and his crew were fantastic. They made us feel welcome. They didn't make us feel small time like a lot of indie projects are small time. And, you know, he treated us like it was a Hollywood premiere and had the red carpet out for us and everything. And we couldn't have asked for more. And it was a beautiful theater. They have a full working bar, so everybody got to have drinks and enjoy themselves, and it was a fantastic experience at the Villaggio Theater.
Yeah, and that's a cool thing about the Villaggio. All their theaters are dine-in theaters, which is kind of neat.
Yeah, you know, so like if you ever wanted to do like the Cine Bistro type dine-in type stuff, basically that's all they do there. So it's pretty cool.
The theater itself is beautiful. It's in a little strip mall, but when you walk inside, you're just going to be blown away because it's amazing. And Joe let us have the run of the place, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think they were happy too because we definitely had we sold out the theater. Not everybody that bought tickets were able to attend, but we definitely filled the theater. We had plenty of people there. If you're interested in finding out more about the Secrets of the Lost Worlds premiere, we did create a video which kind of showed you the pomp and circumstance and everything that went on with it. So definitely check out the video. We will definitely link it in this podcast notes. So check out our podcast notes and click that link and you'll be able to kind of see everything that kind of happened at the premiere.
All right. And as far as distribution, keep an eye out for news on that because we will hopefully have something in place by the end of the year, maybe?
Yeah, definitely by the end of the year. It should start popping up on some streaming services within the next 2 to 3 months. But definitely by the November, December timeframe, we're hoping to be at least on one of the major big five, you know, Amazon Prime, Netflix, one of those big ones, so that people will have full access to be able to see the film and hopefully enjoy it. All right, so coming up next, we are going to talk about the future of Transmissions from Atlantis. Ooh, dun, dun, dun.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
All right, so next up, we're going to be talking about the future of Transmissions from Atlantis.
We started in, what was it, 2012 when we started doing podcasts?
I think so. It might have been 2012.
Yep. And we've had one hell of a run. You know, it's been a lot of fun. We were a weekly podcast when we first started out. As we started working on these different projects that we've been working on, things kind of changed and we had to move to more of a bi-weekly podcast. Then it became a monthly podcast.
And then it was whenever we had time podcast.
Yeah. And, you know, we are pretty good about at least delivering a podcast a month. But it's become more and more difficult for us to be able to do that with all the different projects that we have going on. And now it's especially tougher because over the next 2 to 3 months, not only are we working on Seekers of the Lost Worlds being distributed on the streaming services, we're also working on some projects with Brazen Winch Productions, which includes animated version of Star Mage, some Dr. Geek stuff, and I believe one of Debbie's stories is we're also going to be turning into a short. So there's a lot of different projects that we're going to be working on over the next few months. And on top of all that, we're also moving our current home to a new home, and it's going to be a little
stressful,
bit crazy.
Yeah. A lot of stuff going on, crazy. I've got a massive to-do list.
Yep. So to make a long story short, we are going to be going on a hiatus. Yep. Unfortunately, we're going to be shutting down the podcast at least through the end of this year. We have hopes once we're settled in our new home and things are starting to settle down a little bit that we might be able to start back up again. But at this point, we are definitely going on a hiatus, and we're not sure how long it's going to be, other than we know it's going to be through the end of the year.
So the word I think we would use is that we're going to shut down production indefinitely. That doesn't mean that we won't ever come back. It just means that until further notice, we're just not going to have time to do the podcast. Now, with that said, you know, we still want to do some justice by Jodie Whittaker. We didn't want to quit our podcast altogether.
Yeah, we definitely want to support Jodie Whittaker's run as the Doctor. And, you know, hey, there's going to be a lot to talk about with Jodie Whittaker's episodes. So what we've decided to do is instead of delivering a full Transmissions from Atlantis podcast every single month, what we're going to do is we're going to put together a much shorter podcast, probably about 10 at most 15 minute podcast, where we're going to talk with Dr. Scott and possibly Debbie if she wants to participate, depending on how she feels about the episodes.
And some various other friends who might be joining
us.
Yep,
maybe Calliope, who was part of the Articles of the Shadow Proclamation back in the day when they used to do their show. We don't have a name for the new podcast yet. It's going to be Transmissions from Atlantis Presents Something. Something related to Doctor Who, but we don't know what it's going to be yet.
But we feel like, considering this is Jodie's first year, I felt like if we don't cover, you know, her series, then we're kind of doing wrong by her.
Yep. And the good news is that we are going to be posting a podcast after every episode. So technically, we're going to be going weekly. It's just going to be really, really short.
And it's also going to be really, really raw.
Yeah, it's going to be really raw. We're not going to really have much production value out of it. You know, you're not going to have a lot of the fancy stuff that, you know, that we've had in the past. All we're going to care about is sound quality. And if there's any editing that's going to need to be done, it's going to be very, very limited editing. You know, trying to get some of my ums out of there, things like that. You know, if somebody happens to drop a curse word, you know, if they're really upset about like having an Arbor Day episode or anything like that, yeah, that might require a little bit of editing, but it's going to be minimal at best. So we're going to do the best we can to make sure that it's not a huge impact on our schedule, but we also still want to be able to deliver some Doctor Who talk to you guys, because we know that the majority of our audience had come to us because we talk Doctor Who, because we love Doctor Who, and they want to hear our take on the new Doctor. So, and we want to give it because we're definitely going to have a lot of opinions, right?
Right.
All right. So that's what's going on with the future of Transmissions from Atlantis. So some bad news, some good news. And coming up next, we are going to have our rapid fire segment where we have a whole bunch of movies to talk about.
Do you like movies? Do you like TV?
Do you like discussing the temporal effects of nonlinear time travel and its implication on the plot of the movie Looper?
Okay. Do you enjoy the latest in pop culture news? Do you enjoy superheroes?
Do you enjoy discussing the relative merits of superpowers and their effects on human physiology?
Anyways, if you enjoy these things, even a small amount, you'll love the Rusted Robot Podcast.
Find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Podbean, YouTube, and make sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode.
Subscribe so you never miss an episode.
TheRustedRobot.podbean.com.
All right, so starting with our rapid fire segment, we're going to start with Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yes, so I loved Ant-Man and the Wasp. I have a lot of... Ant-Man always surprises me because of all the Marvel superheroes, he is probably the least, I don't know, you want to say powerful, right? You know, he doesn't have Thor's hammer. He doesn't have Iron Man's suit.
He's not the most recognizable.
Right. You wouldn't think of that guy as a hero, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, I kind of... actually really love his character. And he just has this goofy charm to him, and I think Paul Rudd does it justice, you know, bringing in that goofiness to the character. And it's fun. I enjoy the Ant-Man and the Ant-Man movies, and Ant-Man and the Wasp did not disappoint.
And it's funny because the first time we actually watched Ant-Man was on a plane.
Yeah.
Because when it came out in theaters, we were like, oh, this looks stupid. I don't want to pay to go see this in the theater. We ended up watching it on an airplane on our way to Hawaii, of all places. Mm-hmm. And we were like, I can't believe we didn't go see this. Because Ant-Man was not only fantastic, it's probably on my top list of my favorite Marvel films.
It's up there. Yeah, it's definitely up there. And Ant-Man and the Wasp did not disappoint. It upped the ante on the action. And it also still had a really good plot, really good storyline. I give it a 10. I enjoyed it.
Yep, me too.
Yep. Now, Skyscraper, The Rock's new movie, Dwayne Johnson's new film.
Okay, I'll say this. It's a good popcorn flick.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a bunch of explosions. The Rock does The Rock kind of things. You know, there's a lot of action.
But?
It is Die Hard. That's basically what it is. It's Die Hard. It's a complete Die Hard ripoff.
Down to the point where the owner of the building in Die Hard is an Asian gentleman, and the owner of this skyscraper is another Asian gentleman. Yep. Okay.
And I'm sorry. You know, we've all seen the aerodynamic crazy stunts that The Rock pretty much did in this film. Bruce Willis did that, you know, 30 years ago.
Yeah. The only difference is this building was on fire.
Yeah.
And this building was much taller.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, it is the exact same thing.
Yeah. And the other difference that I thought of was, instead of, you know, trying to save his wife, he's trying to save his entire family, which is kind of more of like Die Hard 2, because didn't Die Hard 2 kind of have to deal with his whole family instead of just him?
I believe so. But yeah, I'm like, it, like I said, it's a good popcorn flick. Oh, and Jason and I now have the AMC Premier A-List memberships, which is why we saw Skyscraper, because otherwise we wouldn't have actually paid to go see it.
Right, yeah. So let's give it a quick rating. I'm going to give it a 6. And the reason why I'm giving it a 6 is because I did enjoy it. It was a good popcorn flick, like you said. No originality at all. Sorry.
Yeah. I'll give it a 7. And the only reason I'm giving it a 7 is there were those times where he's about to do something death-defying, but you could also see the fear in his face.
Yeah, The Rock did a great job. Dwayne Johnson did a great job.
Yeah, he did a great job with that.
And another little twist that was a little bit different from Die Hard was he was a double amputee. You know, he got injured in the line of duty, and the character actually had no legs. But yeah, it was a good film. Not great, not very original, but there was some subtle differences that made it a little bit more interesting than something that's just a complete bad ripoff. And the special effects were good. Special effects were cool.
Yeah. All right, so the next film that we also saw, again, through our A-List membership, is the Mr. Rogers' Won't You Be My Neighbor documentary.
Right.
Now, if you're a child of the 80s, like a lot of us in our 40s are, you have to go see this film.
Yep. I grew up on Mr. Rogers, Electric Company, Sesame Street, the PBS stuff. I grew up on that stuff. And Mr. Rogers was definitely a major part of my afternoon routine. You know, you would come home, you'd put on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, or your mom or your dad, you know, whoever you had would definitely put that on there for you. And Mr. Rogers always had positive messages where you learn stuff from him. And what I never realized was how much of a radical Mr. Rogers was. I mean, he would do things that, you know, were so against the times. But the cool thing about it is he did it, everything that he did was with love.
Yeah.
You know, love in his heart. Like, for example, there's, you know, African-American character who played
a police officer,
right? And one of the big things going on at the time, and this was back in the 60s, was African-Americans weren't allowed to be in the same pool as white people because who knows what the stupid reason was.
Because according to the times, black people would contaminate the water with their dirty skin.
Yeah, right.
Which is absolutely ridiculous.
Obviously very ignorant. But so what Mr. Rogers did was not only did he invite some this particular character to wash his feet with him in the same little tiny pool to cool off, but Mr. Rogers actually washed the man's feet for him.
And shared his towel.
And shared his towel with him, almost mimicking the story right out of the Bible where, you know, Jesus washed the feet of...
Not necessarily of his disciples,
but it was like somebody that's, you know, a holy man should never do anything like that.
Yeah.
You know, so, and Mr. Rogers kind of mimicked that whole parable with this man and proved that, you know, there's nothing wrong with, you know, sharing water, sharing anything with somebody of a different race.
Now, as Jason said, there was a lot of things that he covered, like assassination. He would cover death. He would cover so many things that parents would typically not even cover with their kids because they think their kids wouldn't be ready for those kinds of things.
Yep. It was very, very eye-opening. It was a great documentary. You come out of that film wondering about yourself. You know, Mr. Rogers did so much in his life to enhance the lives of young people and help them learn and help them learn tolerance and learn love. And you start to wonder, well, what have I done with my life to make that kind of an impact? You know, how do I measure up to what Mr. Rogers did? You know, and you can't at this point, you know.
No, but at the same time, we look into our lives and notice that maybe we're good people because of Mr. Rogers.
Yeah, that some of his teachings, and I hate to put it that way because it's not like he was sitting there preaching to people. He would just talk to you. And I think some of those lessons that he taught were a cornerstone for our current generation and why a lot of our generation is a lot more tolerant, a lot more loving, and believe in equality.
Yeah, which makes me sad for the current generations because they don't have a Mr. Rogers.
Right.
You know, to teach them, you know, right from wrong.
Yep. So, Mr. Rogers, Won't You Be My Neighbor film?
10.
Absolute 10. Go see it. You know, hopefully it's still in the theaters in your local area. If not, when it comes to streaming, definitely check it out. If you are around our ages in the, you know, 40s, somewhere around
you
there.
You mean 40 and 44?
Yeah. If you're born like in the 70s or the early 80s and grew up on Mr. Rogers, definitely check this out.
All right, next up, we're going to talk Voltron Season 7. Well, guess what, folks? We just watched Season 6, like a few weeks ago?
Yep.
Season 7 is coming out August 10th, and it's going to be a whole 13 episodes.
That's nuts, right?
Woo!
13 episodes, and how much more do we have to go in Voltron? Because don't they have a set number of episodes that they're going to be doing?
They did, and I think the reason why they're plugging in 13 episodes is because they want to finish up with the series.
They want to wrap it up.
Yeah. They want to wrap it up. There's going to be one more full season of 13 episodes at the end of the year, and I believe that will be wrapping up the series.
Well, It's going to be interesting to see how they wrap it all up. I know you're hoping that Keith and Allura get together before the end of it, so we'll have to see how that transpires over the next 26 episodes, but I can't believe they're already releasing another season. I mean, we just finished the other season. It's right? crazy.
And we're getting 13 episodes in one shot. How cool is that?
That's pretty crazy. All right, so some great news that transpired since the last time we talked to you. Lucifer was saved by Netflix.
Woohoo!
And, of course, we've gone on and on about how much we love the TV show Lucifer and how pissed off we were that Fox decided to cancel it. Thanks to Lucifer being saved by Netflix, we did finally get to see the season finale and the cliffhanger that was left with...
awesome cliffhanger.
Yeah,
my God.
Awesome cliffhanger. So... we're very, very excited that Netflix picked this up, and it's an awesome decision by Netflix, and I don't think they're going to regret it, because I think a lot of Lucy fans are going to be definitely checking it out on Netflix. And the good news is that because it's going to be on Netflix, we might get a full, like, 13-episode dump of it.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, so we wouldn't have to wait every single week to see new episodes.
That's right. So... some more cool news coming out of San Diego Comic-Con. Trailers for Aquaman and Shazam.
Yes, and I got to tell you, folks, other than Wonder Woman, these are the first two DC movies that I'm actually excited to see. Well, at least since The Dark Knight, right? So it's been quite a while since I've been excited about DC films, and the DC universe in general, but this looks fantastic. Shazam looks hilarious. And Zachary Levi.
Yeah, and Aquaman just looks badass.
Yeah, only Jason Momoa can make Aquaman be totally badass.
Right?
And so, yeah, both of them look like Marvel films. Both of them feel like Marvel films. And hopefully DC finally got a clue on how to make a comic book movie and are starting to follow the Marvel formula, because even Infinity War, as dark and foreboding as Infinity War was, it had its lighter moments in the film.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's how you kind of compensate for all the dark crap that's going to be happening later in the film.
But that's the one part that DC has been struggling with, is that they inject so much dark stuff, but then they don't lighten it up.
Yeah.
To compensate.
Exactly. And the only time they did it right was with Wonder Woman. And Wonder Woman was by far the best DC film they've had in the last decade.
And it had dark moments in it, but they also kept it lighthearted.
Yep. And we still haven't seen Justice League, but we might want to check out Justice League now just to see how Jason Momoa did as Aquaman.
Yeah.
Just to kind of check it out. But at this point, we are very, very excited about Aquaman and Shazam, and it looks like it's going to be fantastic, and we're looking forward to it.
Yep.
All right, that's going to do it for our rapid-fire segment. Coming up next, the MCU Rewatch.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to a very special commercial for We Podcast and We Know Things.
Wow, a commercial?
Yes, Sam, a commercial. You do this to me every time. Anyway, we are We Podcast and We Know Things, the single source for all of your nerdy news in gaming, TV, film, music, and all things pop culture. Heck, even wrestling. We're basically spreading the good word of nerd one episode at a time.
Check us out here on the ESO Podcast Network and wherever fine podcasts are, including the iOS podcast app, CastBox, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram to keep up with all the goings-on in the nerdy world. Now back to your ESO Network podcast.
Who's better than us?
All right, folks, we told you that we were rewatching the Marvel Cinematic Universe from Iron Man all the way up to Infinity War, and we've gotten to the point where we've watched all the films that have been released on home video and digital and Blu-ray, and now we're up to Ant-Man and the Wasp and Infinity War again. So that's where we're at.
Yep. So we're going to be rewatching Ant-Man and Little Wasp and Infinity War. Now, the films we just finished watching, most of them are really super amazing, but there's usually one or two that just kind of fell flat a little bit.
And I got to admit, when we rewatched Thor Ragnarok, I don't know how to put it. The first time that we watched it, we laughed our butts off. It was funny. We enjoyed all the gags, but rewatching it, it just kind of felt flat for me. I don't know why. It just felt kind of silly watching Thor act the fool.
See, not for me. I still think it was funny and a bit lighthearted. It didn't fall flat for me.
Yeah. And I mean, I do think that there should be a little bit of, you know, comedy within, you know, the dark universe that is Marvel, especially when things are going to go pretty negative, especially with the fall of Asgard, right? You want to lighten it up a little bit. I mean, we just talked about that in the last segment, but I think they went a little too far with some of the slapstick stuff, just in my opinion.
Now, Avengers Age of Ultron, I still don't like that one.
But you know what? I got a new appreciation for Age of Ultron. It wasn't quite as bad as I remember it being. And I'm not going to say bad, because it was never really bad. I mean, it was still an Avengers movie. It just didn't live up to the first Avengers movie, or Captain America Winter Soldier, or Civil War.
And speaking of Civil War, they should have just made that an Avengers film.
Yeah, it should have just been Avengers Civil War, because basically it was all the Avengers.
Except Thor and Hulk.
Except Thor and Hulk, yes. I actually have a new appreciation now for Age of Ultron. I definitely enjoyed it a lot more in the second viewing than I did the first time around. And, of course, Black Panther was still fantastic. Spider-Man Homecoming was still great. Ant-Man was still fantastic.
See, the only thing about Spider-Man Homecoming is that, for me, it didn't quite feel like a Marvel film.
Well, that's because Sony still owns a piece of that. And, you know, they can't go full Marvel, right?
Yeah. So it's weird, because I feel like Spider-Man Homecoming is part of the MCU, but it's kind of like the adopted child of the MCU.
Well, it definitely feels like that Spider-Man's part of the MCU, because you see him in Civil War and you see him again in Infinity War. So I definitely see it as part of the MCU. Iron Man is in Homecoming, so I honestly don't see how you cannot say that it's not part of the MCU.
I'm not saying that it isn't.
Yeah, or that it didn't feel like it was, because, I mean, Iron Man's pretty much all over the damn thing, so.
I know he is, but I don't know. It just felt, the vibe of it just feels a little different to me.
I like it.
All right, so overall, man, we've been loving the MCU rewatch. We've been watching it not in release order, but in chronological order. So that's been kind of cool.
Yeah, it's interesting, because watching it in chronological order, I think, is a unique way to watch it, because you realize that you might have missed a few things, including references and basically things like, you know, with Black Panther coming right after Civil War, the events in Civil War leading right into Black Panther, even though Black Panther premiered, you know, years and years later. Well, maybe not years and years, but a couple years later. They did a great job of kind of lining those things up and making it feel like it was a continuation. So when you watch it in chronological order, it kind of fits. Everything kind of fits perfectly.
Yeah.
And, of course, some of the, I guess, the end credit scenes kind of throw everything off a little bit. Like, for example, in Captain America First Avenger, when you see the reference to Tony Stark and things like that, Tony Stark hadn't become an Avenger at that point. So it doesn't necessarily fit all together properly.
Well, yeah. I think what happens is that sometimes they want to lead somewhere with those end credit scenes, but then behind the scenes, producers end up going in a different direction.
Right.
And so sometimes those end credit scenes can be a little bit confusing, because they don't actually go in that direction.
Yeah. One of the interesting things that I noticed towards the end of the Marvel movies, of the Marvel MCU releases, is that they started putting little segments of future movies as the end credit scene. Like, for example, Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
They actually had a piece of Thor Ragnarok as the end credit for Doctor Strange. And when it showed up in Thor Ragnarok, they just expanded on the scene.
Yeah, exactly.
But I found that kind of interesting. They started to really start to do that with the last few movies. So overall, MCU, of course, is wonderful. We love the MCU. Marvel knows how to build comic book movies and show comic book movies. We have our little, you know, gripes here and there with a lot of the titles, but for the most part, it's still enjoyable entertainment, and we had a lot of fun rewatching it, and can't wait for Infinity War 2 or whatever the heck they're going to call it to see how it all wraps up. You know, because this is basically a culmination of the first decade of MCU.
Yeah, and it doesn't mean that the MCU is not going to continue after that. There's still going to be many more movies to come. But
yeah, they're just going in a different direction after that.
Yes.
They're going to focus on some of the newer characters that are bringing out, like Captain Marvel, probably more Doctor Strange, more Spider-Man. And hey, Disney has finally completed the purchase, or is about to complete the purchase, of Fox. So you may see Deadpool. You may see the X-Men. You might see the Fantastic Four, all part of MCU. So wouldn't that be something?
Yeah.
All right. So coming up next, we are going to talk Doctor Who with all the San Diego Comic-Con reveals.
Hey there, folks. My name is JC Delatorre.
And I'm Rita Delatorre.
And we are Transmissions from Atlantis, an original member of the ESO network. And we are excited to tell you all about our podcast.
Well, it's everything science fiction, fantasy, horror.
And every single episode will have a segment of Doctor Who. Let's give everybody a taste.
I have my 2 minutes.
Yes.
Okay, then. So no interrupting.
Go ahead.
Fine.
You're using up your 2 minutes.
Shut up. You're interrupting me. Stop it.
You're now up to 50 seconds. This was worse than Kill the Moon.
It was not worse than
Kill the Moon. I would take the moon as an egg before I would take a bunch of trees, sprout up overnight, save the earth, and then magically... And where did the trees go? Where did the trees go? Yes, Transmissions from Atlantis.
Class.
Classy sci-fi pop culture discussions. Check us out, transmissionsfromatlantis.com.
Hello, this is Nick Briggs, the voice of the Daleks, and you're listening to Transmissions from Atlantis. And I urge you to listen, or you will be exterminated!
Laugh hard!
Run fast.
Be kind. Doctor, I let you go.
And plenty of goodies coming from San Diego Comic-Con in regards to Doctor Who. And let's start off with the new trailer.
It's interesting because a week ago, during the
World Cup thing, whatever that is.
Yeah, they were going to release a trailer. It ended up being this tiny little teaser trailer.
Which absolutely was pointless, by the way.
Yeah, and so we were like, okay, so I guess we weren't really getting anything. And then we were like, well, maybe they're going to release an actual trailer in about a week at San Diego Comic-Con.
And sure enough,
they did, and it was good. And you want to tell them more about it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was our first look at of Jodie Whittaker as the Doctor, and so far, she has such a Tennant vibe for me.
Yeah.
And for those of you that don't know me all that well or haven't been listening to us for since 2012, I am a huge David Tennant fan. I loved his version of the Doctor, and he is my Doctor. You know, I grew up on Tom Baker, but David Tennant is my Doctor. And so her channeling David, and of course she knows David from the Broadchurch, sharing a screen with him on Broadchurch, her channeling David is a good, good sign, because I'm excited to see how she brings David Tennant back to Doctor Who in the version of her Doctor.
And we got to see a little bit more on not one, not two, but three new companions.
Yes, and that'll be interesting to see, because it's going to be a crowded TARDIS.
Yeah, two young ones, and the third companion looks to be a slightly older gentleman.
Yeah. So for those of you that enjoyed Capaldi being kind of the grumpy grandpa, apparently we're going to have a grumpy grandpa still in the TARDIS. And hopefully he can deliver what Capaldi was delivering.
So it's going to be kind of cool. They're, based on the trailer, it looked like it's going to be slightly dark, but still lighthearted.
And of course, the big controversy is the Doctor's new sonic screwdriver, which a lot of people are saying looks like a
phallic symbol.
Yeah, baby! Yeah.
Well, let's face it. When has the sonic screwdriver not looked like a phallic symbol?
Exactly! In fact, somebody made a point in that.
In fact, they even had that gag in the 50th anniversary where, you know, they were comparing the size of their sonic screwdrivers, right?
So, right? I mean, it's like, I'm sorry, everyone's bringing that up, and I'm like, okay, every sonic screwdriver could be, you know, a toy of pleasure.
Yeah, baby. Yeah.
Yes, right. And
so, it's Sonic.
Yes, and just because she's a female, it doesn't mean that that's what that is supposed to be. And I think people are letting their dirty little minds go a little bit too far with that. But what did you think of the new design of
I think it looks cool. Yeah. In fact, I think it looks more alien than any of the other Sonic screwdrivers in the past, which is kind of neat.
Yeah. And I'm kind of with you on that. It's got this little interesting handle thing at the bottom of it. And you're right. The actual design of it looks very alien. You know?
Yeah. So, while the other ones looked very techy, this one actually looks like it fits part metal, part organic. And
yeah,
it's interesting.
Which makes you wonder if that's kind of the way her TARDIS is going to look, because they gave us no indication of what the TARDIS is going to look like. So I wonder if the new TARDIS interior, or desktop, I should say, is going to be kind of like this alien-y kind of look, instead of the sterile environment that was Capaldi and the later Matt Smith TARDIS. Right?
Right.
All right, so some more San Diego Comic-Con reveals. Chris Chibnall, the new showrunner, says that there's going to be all new monsters for this particular season of Doctor Who. No Daleks, no Cybermen. It's all going to be new villains.
Yes, and yes. It's like, no offense to Moffat, but I think that he oversaturated with so many Daleks and Cybermen. It's like, one of the last seasons had so many Cybermen in it, it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
And between that and the Daleks, it's like, seriously, come up with another monster.
And I gotta admit, you know, I am a huge fan of the Daleks. I love the Daleks. But In fact, there was a while where we were actually trying to build a Dalek, but that's neither here nor there. As much as I love the Daleks, Moffat used them way too much, way too much. And I'm okay with not seeing the Daleks this year. I can take a break from the Daleks. I do want to see them with Jodie at some point, maybe in season 12 or season 13 or however long Jodie decides to go. But
if they're showing up in one third of the episodes every single season, that's a problem.
And I've made it no secret that I'm not a big Cyberman fan. I've never been a big Cyberman fan. I think they're kind of lame, personally. So I'm okay with not seeing the Cybermen. I don't want to see the Cybermen. I'd rather not see the Cybermen. And Moffat towards the end was also using the Weeping Angels as a crutch. You know, the Weeping Angels weren't even really scary anymore because they had already figured out ways to get around the Weeping Angels. So at this point, I'm interested to see new villains. I'm interested to see new challenges for the Doctor to overcome. And you know what? At one point, the Weeping Angels were new villains, you know, and they became an iconic Doctor Who villain. So, hey, let's see some new iconic villains.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So there's been lots of rumors flying around for John Barrowman. Of course, the biggest that he may make an appearance in the new series. Well,
it doesn't sound like that's going to be the case because it sounds like Chris Chibnall and the writers for this new series of Doctor Who really wanted to separate themselves from the past of Doctor Who. Now, that's not to say that they're not Doctor Who fans and that they are not going to have references that, you know, eagle-eyed fans are going to say like, oh, I see what they did there, you know, that kind of thing. But they want this to really feel like a new series and a jumping off point for new fans. You know, like if you have a friend that you've always wanted to introduce to Doctor Who that there didn't seem to be a good entry point for them, Chris Chibnall wants this season to be that season where, you know, you can tell that friend, hey, watch Doctor Who from the beginning of the beginning of this season and you will be able to get it.
Yeah, exactly. All right. So next up, the footage leak. Now, that happened, what, about a few weeks ago?
Yes. So a few weeks ago, there was a leak of footage of Jodie being the Doctor. And we're naughty, so of course we took a look at it. And it's like I said, I get such a Tennant vibe from Jodie that I think she's going to be fantastic as the Doctor.
Yeah, so any of those people that were doubting whether she was going to be good at this or not,
she's
the Doctor.
She's already the Doctor to me. She's already the Doctor. She's already captured the spirit of the Doctor in the little, tiny little bits that I've seen. She's already got it. So I have no doubts that Jodie Whittaker is going to be a fantastic Doctor. Now, are the companions going to be good? I don't know. We shall see. But I definitely have no doubts about Jodie.
Yep. And speaking of the companions, let's talk about the new cast.
Yeah.
The thing is, I don't really have an opinion yet because I haven't seen enough to be able to base an opinion.
Yeah. I mean, we haven't actually seen them in action yet. So that's kind of unfair to them. Yep. So, I mean, you're going to have three companions in the TARDIS. You have Yasmin, who's being played by Mandip Gill, Ryan, who's being played by Tossin Cole, and Graham, who's being played by Bradley Walsh. The only one that I've ever really heard of is Bradley Walsh. She's been in a few other shows that where he's always done kind of like a comedic kind of role. So I don't know if in this particular series he's going to be the comic relief or the angry old grandpa. We'll have to kind of see. The other two, I'll be honest, I'm sure they've been on British television, but I've never seen them before. So it will be very interesting to see how they handle being companions in Doctor Who. It's a very diverse cast, I will say that. And one of the other interesting things about them is the fact that it's going to be three. When was the last time there were three companions in the TARDIS? I want to say
the last time was when Mickey, Rose, and Captain Jack were all in the TARDIS together.
And that was very brief. That wasn't for a full season.
No, that was a few episodes, if that.
Yep. And then there was, I think back in the classic Who, I want to say Tegan and what's the other girl's name? I always forget her name. And what's the guy's name? The redhead guy. Right now, all you Doctor Who fans are throwing stuff at your radios or ripping off your headphones, saying "You idiot!"
Well, think about it. There were three companions since at the beginning.
Yes, absolutely.
Because there was Susan and the two teachers.
Yes, exactly. But it's very rare when they have that dynamic. Usually, it's the Doctor and a companion, or the Doctor and two companions. They don't usually have the three. And I know they did it in Peter Davison's run. I don't remember them doing that with Sylvester McCoy, or you can kind of say they did it with John Pertwee, because, you know, when he was on Earth, you had the Brig and you had the other Major What's-His-Face, and of course, you know, Sarah Jane.
And sometimes the three were in the TARDIS, but not often. And I believe during Tom Baker's run, he never had three.
Yeah, it's usually just one companion.
Or two, maybe two.
Unless you count, you know, K-9. But usually it was just the one companion. And since the reboot, like I said, there'd be some people that tag along for an episode or two, but you haven't really had three companions in the TARDIS. The most you've had is two with Amy and Rory.
Well, technically speaking, was there ever a time where River would travel with them?
Well, River would travel with them, but again, that would only be for an episode or two. That's not an entire season of three companions in the TARDIS. And we don't necessarily know that these three companions will be in the TARDIS for the entire season. It's just kind of, that's what it seems to be.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting. I did watch the San Diego Comic-Con panel. They actually did publish it now. And they seem to be very – well, Bradley Walsh wasn't there, but both Mandip and Tossin were there, and they both seem to be very hip young people. I don't know. Do kids say hip anymore? I don't think so. I think I just dated myself. But yeah, they seem to be really good kids, and they seem to have a good chemistry with Jody already. Jody's joking around with them and everything, so there seems to be definitely some appreciation between them. Tossin kind of came off a little bit, I don't want to say arrogant, but he kind of came off a little bit like he didn't really care.
Or maybe he was shy.
From the vibe I was getting, he was just kind of too cool for school kind of guy, you know, that kind of thing. But maybe that's just his actor personality and maybe not his character personality. So we'll just kind of have to see how that all works out. But we'll see. You know, it's going to be interesting. I did like Yasmeen or Mandeep. I think she has a really great personality. It'll be interesting to see how it all meshes together. And hopefully it's one of these things where, you know, the Yasmeen character kind of feeds off the Ryan character, who feeds off the Graham character, and they all feed off the Doctor. And, you know, it just kind of works like that.
Yeah. So cool. I'm like you, I'm really looking forward to this new season. It's going to be so vastly different from any Doctor Who we've seen in the past.
Yeah. Now, the one really disappointing thing from San Diego Comic-Con is we don't have a date. We still don't have a date yet, so we don't know. We know it's going to start sometime in October. We just don't know when in October. What Saturday in October are we going to see Doctor Who?
Oh, and one more thing to confirm is they did confirm during San Diego Comic-Con that there will be a Jody Christmas episode this December.
Yep, so the new season is going to be 10 episodes, but there will be an 11th episode that will be a Christmas episode. Chris Chibnall did confirm that. So all those folks that were worried about the tradition being broken with the new crew, it's not going to be broken. We're still going to have that Christmas episode.
Wee-hoo.
Yep.
Got to have something for Christmas.
Yep. All right, so that's going to do it for episode 145 of Transmissions from Atlantis. Our next episode is going to focus on DragonCon. Yep, folks, it's that time of year again. We're going to have interviews with Dan Carroll, Joe Crow, all the usual suspects that we usually have for DragonCon. And it's going to be a fun time because we get to talk about our favorite convention. And it's going to be crazy, so we're looking forward to it. Until then.
Allons-y.
Allons-y, everybody. Goodbye.
Allons-y. I should say allons-y more often. Allons-y. Look sharp, Rose Tyler. Allons-y. And then it'd be really brilliant if I met someone called Alonzo. Because then I could say allons-y, Alonzo, every time.
Been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.